Hello everybody and welcome to the fifth episode of the Design and Marketing Podcast with Rob Cubbon. I hope you're very well. Thanks for tuning in. It's going to be a great episode today because today I have Wes McDowell with me. Now, if you're a designer and you like podcasts, you probably already know Wes McDowell. Wes can be found at thedeependesign.com and he has a podcast that has been going for a year already, the Deeply Graphic Design Cast. And if you go onto iTunes and just search for design, it's one of the first that comes up. It's very likely that you've already heard an episode of the Deeply Graphic Design Cast. He's usually with a couple of co-hosts, usually Mikkel Morrison and Brandon Voss, and they talk about running a web design business. I mean, this is more or less what we're going to be talking about in this episode as well. I talked to Wes about his background, where he comes from, how he started his business, and we talk an awful lot about clients and how to deal with clients as well. But you've got to listen to the interview. It's absolutely great. Before I go into the interview, though, there's one question I have for you. If you go to my site at robcubbon.com, I have just gone AdSense mad. Please forgive me. I had my AdSense account disabled for 6 years by Google. We don't know why. I never ran an AdSense ad. I just never was able to start an AdSense account in the first place. All of a sudden, out of the blue, I get my AdSense account enabled for no apparent reason. So I'm free to put AdSense ads and put ads on my videos in YouTube when and where I care to. So I have advertising on my site for the first time in 6 years, and I'd really appreciate some feedback about that. I'm not too sure if it's worth it. I'm not too sure about the income at the moment. I just really would like some feedback and have a think about that to see if I'm going to carry on that or not. But before I take you into the interview with Wes, I have to explain that I apologise for the sound quality on the first 5 minutes. There does seem to be a little bit of a problem. You can still hear what we're saying in the first 5 minutes. And then after that, it's absolutely fine and the sound quality is perfect. The interview was conducted last year when I was in Brazil, and half an hour before the interview was due to start, I noticed a small fire in the corner of a plot of land opposite my apartment building. I kept my eye on this fire for the next 5 or 10 minutes, and I noticed that it was growing gradually, and the flames were whipped up by a stiff breeze from the ocean and were gathering pace and going perilously near a wooden electricity pylon. I phoned down to the porter and I mentioned this occurrence to him, and he said he would phone the fire brigade. And I thought, well, this is going to all get sorted out in the next 5-10 minutes. 20 minutes later, the fire was raging still and the flames were licking close to the building. The smoke was coming into my apartment and I was just getting ready to evacuate. And I was thinking, oh my God, what am I going to tell Wes? Unfortunately, I was coming at it with a very sort of UK attitude to health and safety, and the Brazilians were much more laid back about this little fire. It actually then burnt itself out more or less. I was able to start the interview more or less at the time we'd planned. Wes, on the other hand, was in California and he had gardeners outside his window cutting the grass. I don't know why the grass grows in December in California. Obviously, they have a slightly better climate than England does. Anyway, that's what we're referring to in the first 5 minutes. But as I say, the quality of the sound, and I've got to say the quality of the interview, it is absolutely perfect after that. So here is my interview with Wes McDowell about running a design business. I hope you enjoy it. But you're not from California originally, I think, Wes. Where are you from?
I am originally from both the suburbs of Chicago and Boulder, Colorado, originally.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And how did you get into design?
Oh, it was a long road. Basically, I always wanted to be an actor. That's how I grew up. And I moved to California. Sorry. We can hear this. It's like California. You can tell it's LA because we've got gardeners working outside. I don't know if you can pick up on that, but Sorry about that. If it's
no problem, I've got an urban fire outside.
That's right. Everyone's got problems, but So basically, I went from being a wannabe actor or out of work actor in LA to doing actors' headshots and so photography. And around the same time, I was in school for graphic design, but I wasn't really doing anything with it. And at a certain point, I decided to focus all of my energy on my photography business and just kind of call it quits with school. And I never looked back at school. But at a certain point, I decided I was having more fun with the retouching and manipulation of the photos I was taking. So it's like, why not use my degree that I've got in graphic design and do what I really love? So I started in, I guess it was about 2001, 2002. Okay. And
That's interesting. Ever since. Was it Photoshop then?
Yes. Back in the early days, I did everything with Photoshop, including laying out brochures because I didn't know any better. And
a love of manipulating photography. Which is exactly the same as me. That's very interesting. And
it's a gateway drug.
Photoshop as your gateway drug, and and running a business, a headshot business. That sounds interesting. So you were employed by actors to do their headshots.
And it's a great business model to rely on out of work actors to pay your bills. So I decided to. I decided to cut that off a few years into it, and you might be noticing a theme here of me giving like acting and that like a few years of a run, and then calling it quits. But I found what I like. So
yeah, I assume you've stuck on a more long term and sustainable business model right now. And
I hope so. Yeah,
I will have mentioned obviously in the introduction. You can be found at thedeependesign.com.
Yes, I can. Brand new redesign, so check it out.
No, it looks really nice. It looked really nice before, but it looks extra specially nice now.
Thank you.
When did that start? When did you start the deependesign.com?
That started when I was living in Seattle. I've lived in LA for about 15 years, but I did take about a 3-year detour in Seattle where I was freelancing there. And I was doing a lot of kind of extended contracts for bigger .coms in Seattle. And at a certain point, I realized I'm not going to make it to where I want to be based on the whims of other people. I need to make it happen myself. So I started the Deep End Design and just have been doing my own thing. And I'm so glad that I did that. It's been very rewarding, and it's, you know, it all, as with any new venture, it takes a little time to catch on. And moving cities didn't really do me any favors either, because then you kind of have to reconfigure things again and catch on again. But it's working out, you know, it's going well.
When did you start both the website and the business? Was it at the same time? And when did they start?
Yeah, I mean, it's peanut butter and jelly. They went together. That's how I was getting all of my clients, was through the website. Before that, I just had WesMcDowellCreative.com. It was my, basically, like, sorry, it's really loud out there.
I've got a fire engine. And I think it has actually arrived.
Nice.
Half an hour after the fire burnt itself out, the fire engine.
That's great timing, yeah.
Yeah.
But back to the website and all. Yeah, that was integral to what I was doing, because at a certain point, I had to make a choice. I had to say, do I want to stick with my name, or do I want to kind of think bigger in the long term? Of, it's like, well, yeah, I eventually do want to have employees, and I want to set up kind of a proper shop. And doing that with just my name might not be the best way to do it.
That's a really interesting point. I am at the moment on robcoven.com, and you know, the one thing is domain names. You don't have to get it right first time, but it really helps if you do. And, yes. I've discussed this before. Do you go for your name, or do you go for or do you create a company with a name and go for that? There are definitely pros and cons to both of them. I can see you don't have any regrets setting up the deependesign.com.
I don't. It's been working out great. And while I still do most of the work myself, there are certain tasks that I hire out. For the most part, it's me. I'm the lead. I call myself the lead designer, but I'm pretty much the only designer.
Yeah.
I am in charge of. I've got a few development guys, copywriters, that kind of thing that I don't do myself. But operating under my own name, I knew would be limiting in the long run. So I'm the kind of person that I think if something's inevitable, just do it now. Because what happens with domain names is the more you change them, the less, the longer you have a domain name, the better Google looks at that. So just do it early, get it out of the way, let it age.
Yeah. Well, that's really good advice, because I absolutely, the best thing about a domain name is authority. And
exactly.
You can't get authority overnight. It grows over the years. And I am more or less stuck with robcoven.com. But for I think we are slightly different people. We've got slightly different businesses. If I did want to make a change, I'd have to be pretty sure about it and do it straight and do it as soon as possible, because you don't want to be changing your domain name every so often.
Just don't ever go into witness protection where they have to change your name, because then you're really screwed.
Right. Well, I'll make sure I don't witness any mafia crimes.
That's a good, if you can make it through life without witnessing a mafia crime, you're doing something right. That's what I always said.
Yeah. That's
it's a lesson for the kids.
Another bit of great advice, right along with your other design advice there. Talking more about your company, because I'm interested in you getting other people to do work for you. You mentioned you have developers, and you mentioned also you outsource some copywriting. In fact, on your website, it's very interesting, because you do make a point of saying you do SEO as well, as a variety of other services that you offer your client. You don't just say web design. There are packages, and I really like that. So can you tell us a little bit about how you organize that stuff? How you get people? How you find people? And how it all works out?
Sure. Originally, starting out, I was hooked up with someone in New Zealand, a developer who was kind of an expert in WordPress. He did my site originally, and things just kind of ended up not working out with him for whatever reason. And the thing is, once you get a website up that claims that you are a web designer, you will start getting emails from India, from every web developer out there. And I always got them. I always looked at them as kind of nuisance emails, until like one day I'm actually looking for a developer to work with. I just happened to open up the right email that day. I said, all right, what do you charge? What do you do? And gave him a shot. And that was one who ended up not being great. That's the thing. Like you'll find when you start managing other people, you will have to go through a lot of finding ones that you don't really want to work with until you hone in on the one that you want to work with. And I think I found that guy now. It's just a trial and error process. Yeah. You give them a shot and you see what they can do for you.
So the one that you're working with now, what part of the world is he from, and how did you find him?
Yeah, he's in India, and I found him the same way. I think actually he might have contacted me on LinkedIn, which I get a lot of those, but it just happened to be right place, right time. He was in front of me when I was looking for someone. And the first project we did was pretty rocky. And then, but it's all about getting to know them and getting to know the way they work and kind of training them in how you expect them to work. And with every project, it gets smoother and smoother. So.
Yeah, that's really interesting advice again, because I find that a lot of people, including myself, try it for the first time, have a bad experience, and then you know, get all uppity and say, "Oh, I'm never going to do that again," you know. I think it's a good thing to persevere with, and I think you definitely need to, just like everyone else, you just need to know people. You need to get to know them, get to know their ways, and find out how to work with them.
Sure, and you can get someone who's just a rock star developer who lives here in the States, but you'll pay so much money, and my business can't sustain that. Right, I'd be out of business if I had to pay someone that kind of money right now.
Oh, for sure.
Eventually, yeah. You know, eventually I would like to have it be more someone in-house, developer in-house, who can maybe manage a few other people and on a freelance basis. But it's all baby steps, and you got to do what you can afford in order to grow.
Yeah, yeah.
And you have to make those connections in order to grow, because if the thing that a lot of freelancers make the mistake about is they don't think big enough. And they only take on what they feel comfortable doing themselves. And that's fine, but how much money can you make that way?
Yeah.
You know, and how...
Yeah.
There's only so many hours in the day.
Yeah. Well, I think this goes... to what you were talking about, making the big jump and getting your domain name, thedeependdesign.com, you said, well, I'm going to have to do it sooner or later, so let's do it now. And mm-hmm. you're saying exactly the same thing with outsourcing and hiring people. Do you really want to spend the rest of your life as a freelancer doing everything yourself?
Right, and I don't know about you, but I'm no good at everything else. Like developing, please, I tried.
Yeah.
Like I tried as hard as anyone ever tried. But my brain does not work that way. Like I've said so many times on my show that like, I don't think that way. And the technology changes so often. There's no way.
Yeah.
I'll pay someone else to worry about that.
Yeah. Personally, I actually enjoy the development side. I have an inner geek inside me, but you're absolutely right. You can't do everything. I mean, I cannot do, I like to get involved with WordPress under the hood, but I cannot do JavaScript as well and various other things. And as you say, it's all going to change anyway. There's HTML5 coming up and all sorts of things like that. And you would be start raving crazy to want to do everything yourself for your clients. Having said that, I mean, I don't actually mean start, because some people do try to do that and then obviously not start raving crazy. But I think it's a good advice to start outsourcing. Start widening the services you offer as well, because, I mean, it always helps to offer copywriting, SEO, all sorts of other things that may not be your core skills, but...
Right.
Your clients will like, and it will help you to get bigger and better jobs, I think.
Exactly. At a certain level, your clients will expect SEO work. They'll expect copywriting. They'll expect an all-in-one solution from you. And yeah, if you want to keep really small clients who just want to do like brochureware, then I guess stick with that. But those days are numbered where people want those kind of sites. Everyone wants something more dynamic. They want to go to you to kind of do it all, and so they don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, yeah.
And those are the good clients anyway, ones that pay money. So
yeah, yeah. No, I agree with you on that, and I think it's all interlinked anyway. If you wanted to just do a brochure type website, you'd still, if you were going to do a good job for your client, you'd still need to know to produce it. So it's marked up effectively and it's optimized for the search engines anyway. So mm-hmm. you might as well offer that as a package and branch out into SEO as well. And everything else is connected. You know, if you want the site to be good, it's got to have good copy. So branch out into that by all means.
That's part of SEO that people never realize. Like they think of SEO and they think keywords, you know, like all the metadata. Mm-hmm. And all the under the hood stuff, but it starts with copywriting,
mm-hmm.
and you know, with the text on the page that people read. So never overlook that.
Yep, and best SEO is great content. I truly believe that. Well, so can I go back a bit about how you set up again? Because I know a lot of my listeners will be interested. They see you now with lots of different people working for you, a very successful business. A few years ago, you were back in Seattle freelancing, you know, using Photoshop. How did you get here from there?
It's a lot of, okay, the main thing is you have to find clients that will pay the bills, good clients, who you need to impress on a regular basis, and you need to have good customer service to keep those clients. When I first started, I had a few web development firms in Seattle that I would do a lot of design work for, and I still do work for them to this day because I kept up those relationships, and you just have to constantly do good work. And that involves researching everything you do, getting inspired to do what you do. Whenever I start a new project, I spend a few hours, you know, quote, researching, but that's really looking for inspiration, and it's looking for what's already been done, what's been done to death, what's kind of upcoming versus passé, all that stuff. And as long as you're good at what you do and treat each project with that mindset, you'll impress your clients, and you'll have staying power that way.
Okay. Well, you obviously know, but having said that, you impress your clients, I know, but I know from listening to your show that you know how to choose good clients from bad clients.
It's trial and error. It's not that they are the only ones that call, but they're the only ones who I will take on, because I've learned in the past 10 years that the bad clients will do nothing but eat up all of your time and pay you almost nothing, and then they may even stiff you for the job afterwards, even if you have a contract. I think you're referring to an episode of the podcast. It's all about spotting problem clients, and that was kind of a cathartic show to do, actually, to kind of talk about all the archetypes of clients that you don't want, like the nitpickers and the ones who just, they find you because you're cheap. And they don't really like your previous work, so there's a built-in mistrust already from the start. And yeah, there's just so many people that you don't want to focus your time and energy on. And having said that, I know when people are new, the tendency is to not, they don't want to turn away any work. But keep it in mind that you need to turn down some people in order to make room for the good ones. You know, and the more you trust your inner instincts with that, the better you'll do. Because there's always that moment in the beginning consultation where you know this is going to end badly.
Yeah.
And then you either say to yourself, but I really need the job, or you trust yourself and say, you know what, going to end badly, I'm going to cut and run now.
Yeah, see, there's a common thread to your advice. I think I could say this about what you just said then. Again, you're starting with the end in mind, aren't you? Because even you're sitting there, you're poor, you've got no money in, and a client phones you and says, I want a website, but they sound like a complete nightmare. And you've got to have the ability. We don't say that we'll always have the ability to say no, because it can be scary sometimes, and you just say yes. But you do need to have the ability to say no to a nightmare client. Mm-hmm. Even when things aren't looking good for you financially sometimes.
Right, but the thing to keep in mind with that nightmare client is you think that might be the answer to your financial problems. It won't be, because you probably won't get paid.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what people need to think about. That nightmare client will make that web design job last for 6 months, and in the end they'll be so upset by how it went, and you might get, you know, whatever pittance they might throw your way, but that time would have been much better off trying to find the good clients. And, you know, I always tell people, don't jump into freelancing until you've got a little bit of money saved up, because you don't want to be acting on desperation.
Yeah, absolutely.
No good will come of it.
Absolutely, because desperation breeds more desperation, because the nightmare mm-hmm. client eats
bad
up your
decisions.
Yeah, it eats up your time, and your time is actually more important to you than your money. And mm-hmm. If you just imagine if you had that time free, I mean, it's something I'm always on about myself, and it's something that. You know, I think I'm good at. I tell you what, though, you still make mistakes. I still make mistakes in this arena. I do still make, you know, one mistake a year, let's say.
Well, that's not bad.
but, you know, every time you think, oh, God, I knew it. You know, I mm-hmm. knew it. Why didn't I listen to my own advice? Well, you know, it's that
hey,
was
that,
just
that
so
happens
annoying.
To me. Yeah.
Yeah.
It still happens to me. I mean, I give out all the advice, and sometimes, you know, you think maybe you read it wrong or something, and sometimes it seems like it's just a big job, and you're like, all right, well, yeah, there's one story I told on the podcast about a website that I took on that sounded like the guys who hired me, they seemed cool. They were, I mean, the nightmare didn't begin till after, so.
Yeah.
But it was a different kind of website with different kind of functionality that I had never done before. And I thought, hey, this would be a great thing to have under my belt, you know. And then as time went on, we went into it. I started to see what the project was really going to become. And by then it was just too late. And I was in, and it got dragged on forever and ever and ever.
Yeah.
And it was a small job, and yeah.
Yeah, I know what you're like. You were seduced by mm-hmm. Sometimes
the
you
siren
can,
song.
Yeah, there's they dressed. There's nightmare clients, but they're dressed in good clients' clothing. Sometimes they
exactly.
they disguise themselves just to fool you. You know.
Yeah. Well, you'll always get people. Then they always say, "Well, this site should just. I want it to be really simple and clean," and it's like. And I would say to them, like, well, no clients ever come to me and said they want a really complicated, cluttered website. Everyone says they want a clean, simple site. They never do. You give them something with a lot of white space, they never know what to do with it. So
yeah.
never let a client telling you that it's going to be an easy job, let that influence how you price the job, because it's never true.
Absolutely. This won't take much of your time. You know,
yeah.
This isn't it. Yeah. If it's so bloody easy, why don't you do it?
Why don't you do it? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, obviously, we've had that one, and that's another piece of great advice. But we think it's obvious. We think these little pearls of wisdom are obvious. They're not obvious, I tell you, because.
Nope. You're the practice.
and I've heard millions of designers say the same thing, because we all still make the same mistakes, and it does come with experience to know these things. So yeah. we've touched upon the podcast. I want to speak more about your site and how you promote it. And I guess the podcast is a big thing. And it's especially interesting for me because, as you probably noticed, I've just started a podcast myself. So,
oh, you have? That's awesome. You have to let me know what that is. I'll listen to it. No, I've been listening to your shows. I like it a lot. I'm a fan.
Well, I'm just an innocent newbie in all this, and you're an old timer. And you've been doing it for a while.
Well, it's funny. This is the year anniversary. Like almost, I put our first couple episodes up on Christmas Eve last year. So
wow.
Going on a year.
Wow. So why did you do the podcast? Has it helped with your promotion of your business? And how do you promote the site and the podcast otherwise?
Okay. Well, I started the podcast, and it's the Deeply Graphic Design Cast. You can find it either on iTunes or on thedeependdesign.com under the community tab, like Rob said. But I started it. There was a few reasons. I was listening to a lot of podcasts. The Freelance Radio was the one I think that I was listening to a lot in Seattle. And I've always loved the talk radio format. I'm kind of a geek that way. I listen to Adam Carolla's podcast, and I love it. And I thought when they stopped doing new episodes of Freelance Radio, it felt like there was a void there. And I felt like there's so much information to convey. And, you know, maybe I don't know what I'm talking about, but maybe the best, you know, how they always say the best way to learn is to teach. And I feel like since I've been doing it, I've learned just as much by doing it as hopefully the people have learned from listening to it. And yeah, it's, you ask how it has helped with my business. It's a weird new business model, I think, which is called, you know, inbound marketing, which I don't do my show for my clients. I do it for other designers.
You better not be doing it for your clients because you're...
Oh, no. Well, it's funny you say that because I try to make it mostly safe for clients, but in their off chance any of them will listen. I don't think any of them do or have any interest in it. And yeah, I do tell some client horror stories on the show, but you know, there's no point in doing the show if I'm not going to be honest. I kind of believe I have a 100% transparency policy. Otherwise, it's a watered down show with nothing to offer. But yeah, so I started the show to help designers, but also by putting good information out there into the internet sphere, I guess, you get links back and you get attention from that. So it's all cyclical. It feeds the other half of the site, which is for the clients. You know, so I got good SEO boost out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's working.
As you say, it is inbound marketing. I found out with my blog, if I put out good information, which is only useful really to other designers, more or less, it's certainly not useful for my average client. And but I have found that it doesn't matter. You put out stuff that you are the actual best stuff you can put out. The the stuff that is going to help the most people as much as it can,
and that you're passionate about. I mean, that always helps.
Well, yeah, I was forgetting about the passion. That's probably.
Always forgetting about the passion.
Yeah, story of my life. Tell you no, I shouldn't forget about the passion. I think that the two go together because I like to. I don't know why. It might be my inner geek again, but I do quite like to tell people little snippets. You know, if you do this in Photoshop, there's a really cool little trick you can do that saves you a lot of time. And I really, there's something about me that really enjoys telling people about that. And likewise, I've really enjoyed talking about my business as well. I actually enjoy now more writing about the business side of things than the design side of things, although obviously I still write a lot about design. But it's the passion and the ability to help people that has benefited me in the blog and you in the podcast, I guess.
Yeah, and I do the blog as well, but I found that the podcast is just something extra that is a little more rare and special. And it, like I say, I've always been a fan of the medium. And I think that there's something about connecting with an audience this way where I know the podcast that I listen to, I feel like I know those people.
Yeah.
And I like the idea of creating something similar to that with me and my co-hosts and our audience. And we get a lot of letters and listener questions and stuff, and it's overwhelmingly positive. And it just makes us feel so great that we've got this kind of community around it.
Mm.
It's really kind of cool.
You're a very funny guy, Wes. Thank you. You have a very good sense of humor, and it comes across in the show.
I appreciate that.
You've been making me laugh. And at the beginning of the conversation, I was very stressed out with a fire outside and what have you. You've brightened up my evening. That's for sure. Your co-hosts as well. They all have their different characters, and you all get along, and you all bounce ideas off each other. And it is just nice to listen to. Well, why do you think it's successful and you've had all this mail and attention because of it?
Well, I think that, thank you for your statements, by the way. I think that it's successful mainly because it fills a niche that isn't represented too much on iTunes or in the podcast world. Because I do notice that most of the design podcasts, and I'm not saying one format's better than the other, but I think ours is unique in that every episode touches on a new topic that people can learn from rather than a lot of them focus on just kind of interviewing people that are kind of already out there. You know, a lot of them will have kind of big designers on, and that's cool. I listen to those too, but I think our show just kind of gives them information that they need in hopefully a semi-entertaining way.
Yeah, it's
and the thing is, people go back when new people find the show. I've seen in the you know, I analyze all the boring statistics and stuff. It looks like they all go back and download a bunch of the past shows to catch up because it's all new topics.
Yeah,
things they can use.
Yeah, I think it's yeah. kind of from the cold face, isn't it? It's from people who are day in day out doing the job that the graphic designer does. You know, and there's millions of us around the world.
And we always try to talk about these things in an honest way without being overly negative, because yeah, there's no point in sugarcoating any of it. And in fact, it's not all positive. We've been getting a little bit of hate mail lately. Like a few people have been saying things like, "We think that you know you talk down to you know certain designers or whatever." And I've gotten a few harshly worded letters lately, and basically what I say to that is just, we're not going to censor what we say, and we're not going to make it look like this industry is full of sunshine and rainbows. It's not.
Well,
there's some harsh realities.
I'm sorry to hear you're getting that, because that is nasty stuff no matter what. But I mean, I've got...
That just means you've made it. When you start getting hate mail, that means you're doing something.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I was just going to say I receive hate mail as well, and it comes with the clicks. You know, if you get thousands of clicks, one of them is going to be a dodgy person. Then that's it. But you're absolutely right about the honesty point. You know, because people, the internet can be a bit of a sugary coated world at times. And you know, when you read a blog post by a successful design blogger, and every one of the 100 comments beneath it is saying, "Oh, well, that was great." You know. And right. it does get under your skin a little in the while. It's nice to hear the real world from your show, Wes.
Yeah, well, thank you. And I don't think we're overly. I don't think we're that negative. I couldn't believe when I get some of those letters, just because I don't feel that that's the tone of our show at all.
No, well, it's jealousy, isn't it? It's just.
Well, you know, I think just some people don't like any kind of negativity in the world. But guess what? That's you know.
Yeah.
It's a business like any other business. We're not doing this out of art. At least I'm not. I never claimed to be an artist. I'm a designer. Like I don't do fine art. I just, what I do sells products. And that's what you have to remember.
Yeah, I've heard you speak on this on the show as well. And I'm definitely... I'm with you. Actually, all the times you give opinions, I actually go along with it. I go along with everything you say about clients. I go along with everything you say about design not being art and not taking yourself too seriously. The only thing I'll tell you what I haven't. I remember I was listening to one thing about logos, and you all said that you show your client a prospective logo or options in black in black and white.
Uh-huh. I thought you were just talking about that on a previous podcast too, no?
Yes, we were. Yeah, but we were saying that we like to show them in color because we've had bad experiences showing them in black and white before. And your arguments were for, you know, take the color away so they just look at the form and they concentrate on it and I think that works. That works mentally. I found it. We found me and Tara when we were discussing this that we showed these black and white logos to clients and they just hated them because they were black. They just couldn't put them into context of a nice shiny logo with a color in it.
You know, I mean, there is certain logic to that, because there are a lot of people who can't visualize things that are not in front of them. Like, that's why houses have to be staged before people will buy them. They can't visualize an empty space and see it for what it could be. So I agree with you. The only, and yeah, I mean, I have had bad experiences showing in black and white, but I think you also have bad experiences showing them in a color scheme that maybe they're not happy with. Like Tara was talking about how if someone hates the color purple, then then that whole logo is just kind of shot based on the color.
Yeah, yeah.
Versus the form, so.
Yeah, well, this is one of the problems you get with clients, because we can see things. You know, if you show us a logo in a color we don't think's right, we can easily say, I think that'll be better in another color. Whereas some clients might not have that ability. So it's always, as you say, it's communication when it comes with clients, you know.
Yeah. And yeah, I have had clients who just kind of hate everything when it is black and white. And then what I tend to do is, if that happens, if I can tell that that's what they're particularly like, you know, if you get someone who just, they're very, what is it, left-brained? That is
logic is
left-brained. I always forget. Yeah, they're just very logical. Yeah. Those tend to be the kinds of clients that, if you get the sense after showing them in black and white and they're not getting it, then you might want to introduce the color. That's my policy.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely a left brain, right brain thing that we've got to juggle. I think actually designers have a good balance of left and right. I think to be a good designer, you need a good bit of the two.
Yeah, I think so too.
Well, Wes, look, I mean, I know I said so before, but I'm really grateful for you taking your time out on a Monday afternoon in sunny Los Angeles, because Monday is always my busy day. I don't know about you, but Monday afternoon, I would have never...
Well, there's always time for you, Rob.
Wes, honestly... That is a lovely thing to say, and thank you so much.
No problem. Thanks for having me on. It's been fun.
Just one last question before you go. Is there anything else you'd like to say, Wes, about what we've been talking about?
Well, I would just like to remind people to listen to my show if they're interested. It's the Deeply Graphic Design Cast, and also I'm doing an ebook that's going to be published on Kindle, all about graphic design clients and how to, the title's still in flux, so I can't really give a title yet. But
why didn't you tell me?
No, it's okay. It's not done yet. So.
Yeah, but we've got to talk. Well, I've been very interested in how you get that. You get on with that though. Are you going to put it on? Is it going to be free or is it going to be?
It's going to be. I haven't decided on the price, but it's going to be under $5.
Right.
It's going to be like the definitive guide of the freelance graphic designer, how to, you know, find and work with and keep the good clients.
That's watch out for that. That really is going to be interesting. I'm glad I asked you that question now.
Yeah.
But
no problem.
Well, thanks a lot, man. I really enjoyed talking to you. And
thank you, Rob. Yeah, it's been a pleasure.
Have a great afternoon.
Oh, you too. Bye.
Cheers. Bye. Thank you very much, Wes McDowell. I hope you enjoyed that. Some great advice there from Wes about running a web design business, keeping the good clients and getting rid of the bad clients. Lots of advice there. I hope you enjoyed that. Remember, you can find Wes at thedeependesign.com. And his podcast is called The Deeply Graphic Design Cast. As I say, just go onto iTunes and search for design and you'll see his dark maroon red logo there. And subscribe to that podcast if you haven't already. So, pop by to robcubbon.com and leave a comment after any of the blog posts, or message me via my contact form if you have something to say. It's great to have your feedback, as always. Thanks for your company on this podcast. I hope you enjoyed it, and I'll see you next time. Bye.